baptism. Do you want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.
Indeed, if you're looking at the time, it is now 6 minutes after 7 p.m. this evening. Thank you so much for joining us right here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media. Of course, the number that you can use is 0734703520, 0734703520. For those of you listening to us outside of South Africa, firstly, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. It is +2773 4703520. If you're joining us for the first time right here on Business Sense, welcome to the family. Thank you so much for joining us. We do this thing every month. Monday to Thursday between 6 and 8 p.m. as we talk about business and money. Well, we try and make sense of business and money. It's not an easy conversation, but one that we certainly hope that we can certainly have with you. So every Monday to Thursday between 6 and 8 p.m., you're more than welcome to join us. Just to run you through what we do every Monday, we talk about personal finance and we tackle every particular topic you can think around personal finance, from money to budgeting to all those sort of stuff. Why? Because they are quite important and they have a bearing on our lives. And on a Tuesday, because, of course, technology drives almost everything that we do, we speak about the business of technology every Tuesday. And on Wednesday, we focus on entrepreneurship and small businesses. Why? Because they are the lifeblood, as some people have argued, of any economy, whether developed or emerging, whatever that you want to use as a description. Well, those are very, very important. And on Thursday, particularly, we do what we call shapeshifters. And today, of course, it being a Thursday, the 10th of November 2022, we do have shapeshifters. It is a segment for those of you joining us for the first time. And this is a segment that looks at some of the leading people in industry, in religion, academia, and the likes. We try and talk about the person behind the person. That's what we want to understand, right? The person behind the person. And our shapeshifter today is one leader that I personally look up to. It is none other than Ntate Bonang Mohale. And of course, I've been following him for a very long time. And for me to have this particular conversation with him today is something that I have been looking forward to for years. I must tell you that Ntate Mohale, for years, I know you don't, you didn't follow me on, well, don't follow me on Twitter, but I did put it out one day and I was like, "Kwatla wuli Ntate Mohale, can anyone give me his numbers?" And for years, I've been trying to get a hold of you. And for me to have this conversation today, like I said, it's certainly one that I have been looking forward to. Ntate Bonang Mohale, of course, is the president of Business Unity South Africa. He is the chancellor of the University of the Free State. He is the professor of practice in the Johannesburg Business School, College of Business and Economics, and the chairman of the Bidvest Group Limited, SBV Services, and ArcelorMittal. He is a member of the community of chairpersons of the World Economic Forum and author of best-selling books, which I do have with me, which is Lift As You Rise, which was my favorite. And I'm on to Behold the Turtle and Ntate Mohale, but Lift As You Rise. And I think the stories behind Lift As You Rise is one that has been fascinating for me, and I really enjoyed that book. For those of you, if you have any questions and want to join us, it is 0734703520, 0734703520. Dumela Ntate.
Dumela hle Morena Moloi.
Le kae Ntate?
Re tswile sebata lona le kae?
No, re tswile Ntate. Welcome and thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Mofuthu wa mokalo ka sothuthu ha o tona mpa diqhashaletse ke gotse moroko. Ke a bona gore ke amohelehile lapeng.
Ah Ntate ka lebo. Eh so se tsa skana o lena ke lahlile ke le mo sothuthu but that sounded really, really amazing. Now, for those of our listeners, Ntate Mohale, because we've got listeners even outside of South Africa, by the way, who always listen and join us, and something that we really appreciate. For those of our listeners who don't know you, Ntate Mohale, kiman.
So the people that I work closer with, they say I'm a change agent.
Okay.
I'm a defender of democracy.
Okay.
I'm a social justice activist.
Okay.
When I go home, I've got two divine daughters.
Yeah.
They just see another dad.
Okay.
And they correct my pronunciation.
Okay.
They tell me it's not broccoli.
Okay.
It's broccoli.
Broccoli. Yeah.
I see yacht. It's a yacht. I see development.
Oh, okay.
It's development. So I learned so much from my two divine daughters.
Yeah.
And of course, having been happily married for 41 years, on the 28th, on the 24th of August, this year, my greatest teacher and role model is my lovely wife, Miss Susan.
Okay.
So that's the sum total of Bonang, I'm retired.
Okay.
I took an early retirement at age 55.
Okay.
And my grandmother, when I turned 40, said, you can now do two things.
Okay.
You must do only those things that you want to do.
Okay.
And be only with those people that you want to be with.
Oh. So that's, I suppose, what you kind of do in your retirement now.
Exactly.
Oh, wow. That's very nice. Now, if there's one thing that I've noted, Dr. Mohale, and even reading through the book, is that you remember dates. How important is that?
I suppose it's part of our business training.
Okay.
But also, when you are married, you get into trouble often.
Okay.
You forget your wife's birthday, your own anniversary, and you get reprimanded lovingly.
Yeah.
And you promise yourself to say, you know, I'm not going to do this again.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try and be more thoughtful.
Yeah.
And that's how it starts.
Yeah.
So, and then you get into business. Business is a good training ground
for
remembering dates, numbers, etc. So now, because I've been working for such a long time, it's what I do. It's effortless.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. I've noted that because every time I read through your books, you remember specific dates, specific time, ages for that matter, what was happening at that particular point in time. So that's something that I really, really appreciate. So talking about dates, you were born in the 1960s. And I learned as a young man growing up, they say, Aucho dibitola date ya mutomuhulu, right? So I'll say in the 1960s. You were born in the 1960s. And for some of our listeners and some of us who weren't born at that time, can you please paint a picture of what life was like during the 1960s?
I don't remember the day, but I think it was the 22nd of November, 1961. I'm one of six other siblings. So there's seven of us, five girls and two boys. I'm the first son, bang in the middle. Kasi so tutu mwana matsibulo ke thakanta tai.
Okay,
so the firstborn son is my father's equal. My other brother is number six. So there's two of us. So I got spoiled being amongst five ladies. I just remember that we were so happy. And we had a matriarch in my mother who taught me most things that I know. She taught me how to plaster the wall, how to paint on the 1st of September every year without fail. She taught me how to plant in that four-roomed house. And she taught me how to cook. And she tricked me.
She'd
say, you know, you'll get married someday. And your wife might get sick. What are you going to do to look after her? So you better learn how to cook. And those were the days when there were blue jobs and pink jobs. And I knew my job. My job was to chop the wood every day and collect the coal for our jewel stove that would heat up the whole house.
I remember those stoves. My grandmother had one of them.
That was my job. It doesn't matter what I was doing, how busy I am. But in about 4 or 5, I would chop the wood and bring the coal in-house so that the ladies then can prepare the fire. But that early on, I felt an obligation that when they are busy or they are not there, I should just somehow make the fire. And that's what I did. And because my mother taught me how to cook, when I got home and they were busy, I would just cook.
Okay.
The most amazing thing is that my friends, they used to come home mostly over weekends to play chess because I had a chess board. And then later on, we bought a table tennis and we made some sort of an indoor club. Because growing up in the township, these amenities are just not there. And every time they come, especially on Sunday mornings, I would buy a loaf of brown bread. It wasn't sliced those days, so you had to slice it yourself with Erica butter.
Okay.
And I would use this butter to prepare them scrambled eggs. And I would make them tea and coffee. But my specialty was to make them Milo.
Okay.
Because if they asked for Milo, then I wouldn't make it with water.
Yeah.
I would make it with boiling milk.
Okay.
So I would put half water and half boiling milk, and they would say it is so creamy.
Yeah.
And I learned then to say, you know, you can make yourself useful.
Okay.
Now that I'm married,
yeah,
that philosophy carries me through. I'm very clear that I didn't get married to Susan so that she could cook for me, wash for me, and pick up after me.
Yeah.
When I come from the office, it doesn't matter how hectic I've been. It doesn't matter the title, and I've had good titles in my youth. I would throw the tie aside and start chopping some tomatoes and onions and potatoes. And she would come whenever she comes, put her arms around me from the back and say, "What are you cooking?" And say, "I don't know." And she will just take it from there. But my proudest moment is that my eldest daughter, Mkhunu Tsepiso, she went to UCT. I took her there. I spent 3 weeks with her because our parents only went to our universities on the day that we graduated. But I made it a point, it was a conversation with myself, that whenever she comes home, I'll always cook for her. So she grew up knowing that when I get home for April holidays, for June holidays, for September, Dad is going to cook. And that gave me a lot of joy.
What were the challenges in the 1960s?
I was too young, so I can't remember. All I know is that I didn't even know that I was poor. All the four-room houses looked the same. If you had money, you had a little bit of a stoop, and you also had a gate that closes by itself. Not because it had electricity, but would use the mattress springs to latch from one end to the other. So you push it with force. When you leave it, it bangs closed. That's when we knew that you had money. But we all looked the same. My mother and my father were unlearned and unlettered. We taught my mother how to read. She would read a newspaper, know how to write her name as her children. And but the most amazing thing and truly a beautiful thing is that every Christmas we'll get bought new clothes.
Okay.
And every year we'd go to school and would have full uniform and would have shoes. So those are my happiest moments. So when my father passed away in 1979, I was 17. And I said to my three other siblings that come after me, from today, all your school needs will be taken care of by me. You will never have to stop going to school because you don't have money. I'll make sure that you have it. You will be the ones that determine how far and how high you want to go. But you won't say, "I stopped because we lost our father and therefore I had no money." And I made it my responsibility. And I must say that I carried that. And my mother got so used to this that when I went to Wits University in 1981 to study MBBCH, wanting to be a clinician, because the most prosperous people in the township Katlehong at that time were doctors. She would come go to Len Thomas House inside Baragwanath Hospital, in it's now called Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital, and ask for money from me as a school child. And she loves slaughtering. Any excuse she would slaughter. And she would say, "No, Kebatle with some kid," and I would give her whether it's for a sheep, basutur, sabakangku, or sometimes ka home. And sometimes it will be big things like weddings. I would pay for all of it. So I learned to be independent early on. But it makes sense because when I was in standard three, I would buy a sack of oranges, hang it by the fence, and then people would throw a stone on the roof to say, "No, they want to buy." Those were the days when people were reliable and they were honest. And then when I graduated, I would buy a box of apples and sell them in trains. In standard four, I bought my first camera, Halina 1000. And I would take photographs. It was 1 rand per photograph. 50 cents when I take a photograph, which covered the entire developing and processing. When I come back, I give you your photo, you give me the 50 cents, which went straight into my margin at that time. It was really simple. By the time I got to standard six, I had five cameras. Nikon F1, Canon AE1, Pentax. I remember that when I chose to buy my Nikon F1, I paid exactly the same price as a BMW 318i.
You did mention that in the book, yes.
Yes, exactly the same price. And it gave me so much joy to say, I didn't choose to buy a car, that on that afternoon would be demanding petrol, that summer I would need to be replacing wiper blades. But I chose to buy an asset that could generate income. I didn't know much about business then, but I just knew that this can't be a bad decision. As a result, from standard three, my parents never bought me a pair of socks. I've always made sure that I'm okay. By the time I went to Mokgobeng, lower secondary, Reahile higher primary, and then I went to Katlehong, senior secondary. Lepile LM Taunyana was our school principal. I had a close, personal, intimate relationship with him. And even at that time, I paid for all my fees. And I would sell stuff. When I went to Katlehong, I bought two things for my mother that up until today still gives me a lot of joy. I bought her a fridge from Fuchsware in Alberton. And I paid somebody to go and fetch it during their sale.
Yeah, I'm sure she didn't believe it.
She was used to it by
then. Okay.
My mother is very demanding.
Yeah, okay.
And then I bought her a stove to replace this jewel stove that was short, black, and you could do a roast that's to die for. Because each time I went to Simbani Station to go and develop these photographs, it took a week.
Yeah,
I saw these pictures of stoves advertised, made of enamel. It was a stove. They used to call them smokeless stoves, and they had a canopy, and they had a drawer. You could warm your food on the top drawer, then you can put your wood in the bottom drawer so that it dries out over a period of time. And I bought my mother that, and when they delivered it, I looked at it, they changed the chimney, etc., and I said to the guys who have come to deliver it, they've installed, said, is it okay? Yes, everything's okay. You have tested that? I said, but where's the chicken that I saw when it was advertised? Because you could see through the oven with the glass. I said, where's my chicken? And they laughed and just left. I was genuinely expecting a chicken.
Oh wow, that's interesting. Now when you lost your father, how was that?
It was traumatic.
Yeah.
Even though the matriarch was my mother.
Yes.
My father worked. He didn't say much. I didn't do lots of things with him. I loved him to bits. And in his own way, he taught me some stuff. Out of 10 things I learned, 8 of them I learned from my mother. So, and he wasn't a sickly person at all. Strong, proud, Mosotho man. Tall and lean. With a nose that really stands up. And my nostrils look more like my uncle's. My younger brother looks like my father. Almost the same height. The dark complexion. Ebony black. Genuinely, truly handsome people. So this one Thursday, he just didn't go to work. So I went to school and I came back and he was still there. And I said, is there something? I said, no, I'm not feeling okay. So I had a friend, Dr. Joel Matsipa, just opposite, across the street, who had a surgery. So on Friday morning, on going to school, I whispered in his ear to say, I think you have better look at the old man.
The patient.
Because he hasn't gone to work and he's not sickly. When I came back, I didn't go home. I went to him and said, no, he's got some respiratory infection, upper respiratory tract infection, but nothing serious. Give this to him when you get back. When I opened the door, my father, when he was very loving, he would say, Bo, short for Bonang. Because when I was born, he said, Bonang Mohlolo. Mushanyana ka hara banana.
Hence
my name is Bonang. Which means, lo, behold. When my brother was born, number six, he said, Rientseng Basutu. What have we done in the Mohale household to be blessed by two kings? So they valued boys that up until today still beyond me. Why? But they did. So he said, Bo, and I got in. He said, but why did you go and tell Matsipa that I'm unwell? I'm okay. I said, no, I was worried. Yeah. And I said, and he gave me this. Yeah. You can take this. And he started taking his medication. Mm-hmm. Saturday, he was home. Sunday morning, my friends come. I cook for them as I normally do. I say to them, before I come and eat with you, mm-hmm. let me give my father a plate of food. So mm-hmm. I went to his bedroom. Mm-hmm. There was only one bedroom for parents, mm-hmm. one bedroom for the girls. Mm-hmm. The boys will see to finish. Mm-hmm. And he was still in bed. This mm-hmm. was very strange. So I said, are you okay? He says, no, I'm getting much better now. Mm-hmm. And so I brought you food. And he says, no, I haven't washed my hands. I said, no, I'll bring it's a scotrol or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a bucket of water so that he can wash his hands. He stood up and went to the loo and came back because the toilet is outside. Came back. And as he sat on the bed up, leaning against the headboard made of metal, I didn't give him the food. I said, no, because you're up already. I took his washing rag and started putting soap, lathered it with soap, and washed him from the head just to the waist. Mm. And we were talking. And then I put it in this bucket to try and rinse it. Mm. When it was rinsed so that I can dab him, and he was quiet. So I thought he had fallen asleep. Mm. So I was staying with my father-in-law, who's married to my second-born sister, Abu Jimmy. So I shouted at him and said, the old man seems to be resting. His food is there. If you want to eat it, you better eat it because I'll make him fresh one when he wakes up. Mm. He got into the room. He went to him and he looked at me and he says, he's gone.
Sure.
That's how my father left. He passed away in my hands and I didn't even know it.
Sure. That must have been traumatic. Now, as someone who has followed you for quite a while, and I've looked at some of the people that you've mentored, when they talk about you, they talk about how much of a strong family man you are. I want to ask this because some of my friends, they requested that I ask you this question. Why marriage at 17?
I don't know. I laughed, Susan.
Yeah.
I was petrified that there's too much competition.
Okay.
Somebody else might be there before me. So I thought, if I put a deposit, it won't work. So I said to her, look, I've just lost my father.
Yeah.
And I've got all the intentions to look after my mother.
Yeah.
I need help.
Okay.
And she said, yes. I look at her now and say, what were you smoking? What were you thinking? At 17, I was nothing. I had
exactly,
nothing.
Exactly.
Absolutely. But in hindsight, that was the best decision I've ever made.
Yeah.
In the book, Lift As You Rise, I'm asked the question, if you had your life to live all over again, what would you do differently? And I say, I would get married to Susan.
Yes,
earlier.
You mentioned that.
Earlier.
You mentioned that.
Because Susan is so easy to love.
Sure.
She's a strong, powerful warrior of a woman.
Yeah.
She's born me two divine daughters.
Yeah.
But my life was focused because of her. Get married to somebody at 17, you then say, but where am I going to put her? And then we start looking for a house. We did. We owned our own house in Davidton.
Yeah.
Boyer's View.
Yeah.
And then you say, but I don't have curtains. People will see.
Yeah.
And then you organize curtains.
Yeah.
And you say, but our parents are coming over the weekend. Yeah. Where will they sit? And then you organize furniture.
Yeah.
So in my 20s, I lived in a bonded house, three bedrooms, with a bathroom inside and a fully furnished kitchen.
Which was very rare at the time.
Very rare. I was the first in my family.
Yeah.
You know, I remember it had a glass hob with four plates, and it had an under-counter oven, an extractor fan, all in one line. I mean, this was it.
Mm.
Absolutely. Mm. And Susan was there to see me through all of this.
Sure.
I sent her to school at Vets. I was paying for her from my own pocket.
Yeah.
She did BA social work. She was the first cohort. Yeah. BA was 3 years.
Yeah.
They made it 4 years to be an equivalent of an honors.
Yes.
And that's what she completed.
Yeah.
And we didn't even share a room when we went to Glenn Thomas' house. I wanted to have a separate room. I had a separate room so that she can study. 1,720 was my boarding fees. In fact, it was called residence fees, and the same with her. But we made by. And I learned one lesson, that, you know, we are at our best when we serve others.
Sure. Sure. And I know you mentioned that quite a lot in a lot of the leadership talks that you give, right? And I think it brings a very fresh perspective on how we understand leadership and what that is. But that particular question, I think it was also inspired by the fact that, you know, at 17, there isn't a lot. You are still at school. She was still at school. And so this decision to just decide, you know what, I'm getting married. Now I think we understand why, right? And it kind of makes sense. And I think a lot of us that look up to you, of course, from just that angle can realize that it is possible to stay married to one person and just be with that one particular person. And I'm thinking because nowadays we have a lot of challenges when it comes to marriages. A lot of marriages are breaking up and all this sort of stuff. So to learn that and to look up to that is quite interesting. Now, when I talk about your activism.
So before I do that, I don't think I had a choice. Because okay. Remember, to get married, you need X number of cows.
Yes.
So I had X number of cattle. And okay. That's it. So I didn't have another set.
Yes.
So I had to make this marriage work.
Oh, okay.
So I absolutely no choice. So yeah. When I try to get funny with Susan now,
yeah,
she looks at me and says, "Don't try and be clever with me."
Okay.
And she comes close to me and says, "I know, and I saw, and I was every single solitary one of this one when it came up, and then I know that's the time for me to shut up." So she points at my beard and says, "Don't try and be clever with me. I saw every single solitary one of these come up. So
yeah, I was there.
You better behave." And then I'm at my best behavior.
Oh, that's really beautiful.
Yeah, so I couldn't afford a second wife.
Yes.
And my father himself was not a polygamist.
Yes.
My grandfather
had
seven wives.
Yeah.
He was a king in Lesotho. Yeah. He could afford it.
Yeah.
In Joburg, I figured it out very quickly to say, poor as I am, I think I hit it lucky with Susan. I mustn't try and be funny now.
Yeah.
I must make this thing work.
Yeah.
So even in my marriage today, I choose happiness.
You choose happiness.
It doesn't matter what happens, I choose to be happy.
Sure. 0734703520, 0734703520. That's the number that you can use. I've got a question here, Mtate Mohale. It says, how has it been with his Christian journey up until now?
So I'm a good Catholic boy.
Yeah.
I was an altar boy.
Okay.
And that's how I brought up my two daughters. Yeah. But you see, I don't romanticize poverty.
Okay.
And I am a realist. I profoundly understand that Christianity was brought to us. We were not born with it. Those missionaries. But I'm absolutely resolute that the good Jehovah can't be so bad as to create black people and put them at the southernmost tip of the continent and leave them without any form of faith or religion. Therefore, today, I'm much more spiritual, which I think it's a higher form of religion when religion itself is a higher form of Christianity. So I look at, but why am I here?
Yeah.
What's my purpose?
Yeah.
That to me is more important than just being seen to be a part of a congregation. Being there, done that.
Yeah.
I think the best way I understand and I fulfill my spirituality is to say those that are helping others are completing God's work.
True. This book, Lift As You Rise, right? And I'm going ahead of myself here and just looking at some of the questions here. You speak about your driver, and you don't call him a driver, never called him a driver, you always called him a friend. Is that what Lift As You Rise means?
Yes, it means many things. So his name was Nelson Sithole. I called him Matabela.
Yeah.
He took me everywhere.
Yeah.
But I had a driver before then.
Okay.
Ntate Mazamba, who was older than me.
Yes.
I knew that he works for me.
Yeah.
That's the classic definition at work because I'm the MD.
Yes.
But I said, being my uncle, he works with me.
Not for you.
No.
Okay.
And I said to him, you will always be my uncle. And I'll treat you as an uncle. I would never give instructions to you. I'll always ask. And because I'm your son, don't hold back on giving me advice as to how to run Otis elevators.
Yes.
And he did.
Yes.
Lastly, I said, Lift As You Rise, because it's an African adage.
Yes.
Not some Shakespearean whatever.
Yes.
Because we must learn to tell our own stories.
Yes.
And our own lived experiences.
Yeah.
To chronicle, archive, and curate.
Mm.
Because until and unless lions have their own storytellers,
mm.
stories about hunting will always glorify
mm.
the hunter,
mm.
not the lion.
Mm.
Therefore, history is up to the temporary occupants
mm.
of the corridors of power.
Mm.
If we don't think for ourselves,
mm.
we place our future in the hands of others.
Mm.
It is up to us
mm.
to create our own new world.
Mm.
Every country has a plan for Africa.
Mm. Yeah, true.
But unfortunately, Africa does not have a plan
sure.
for itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let alone Africa having a plan for other countries.
Yeah.
Africa has no plan for China.
Yeah.
Africa has no plan for the United States of America, yeah. the biggest economy
yeah.
in the world. Africa has no plan for India, which
yeah.
has 1.3 billion people
yeah.
like itself.
Mm.
That's why our leaders are doing all sorts and manner of things.
Sure.
Africa is not a poor continent,
mm.
just poorly managed.
So
lift as you rise as an African edge to pilot, highlight, and celebrate our Africanism. Says, at a personal level,
mm.
you don't have to wait until you are at the pinnacle of the mountain.
Okay.
You don't have to wait until you have the title called MD.
MD, yeah.
Take two steps in the corporate ladder of success. Mm. Extend a hand and lift mm. as you rise. It's a continuous tense.
Yeah.
Not once you have risen.
Yes.
It is who we become in the process of succeeding.
Mm.
It says there is no exercise better for the heart
hmm.
than extending a hand down
yeah.
and lifting another human being
yeah.
as you rise.
Yeah.
It is beneficial to you.
Hmm.
And it says if you are a company, you need to continue to do well by doing good.
Mm.
Because when the company does well, society generally does well.
Yeah.
That as companies, you can't be an island of prosperity mm. in a sea of poverty.
Of poverty.
It says if you are a government, the best amongst us lead with a heart of a servant.
Mm.
Because servant leadership is not a leader with many servants.
Mm.
Lift as you rise. As I end, says, nature is a wonderful metaphor for
yes.
business.
Yeah.
There is nothing that nature does that mm. it does for itself.
Mm.
Everything that nature does, it's not self, it's the other centered. That's why rivers don't drink their own water. Trees don't eat their own fruit.
Mm.
And the sun doesn't shine because itself needs the vitamin D.
Mm.
The flowers don't give us this wonderful fragrance because they themselves want to smell like Fontainebleau.
Mm.
It's for others.
Sure, that's beautiful. Now, I want to take us back to 1976 when you were imprisoned. What was the reason?
So, like all other kids, were excited.
Yeah.
People say the June 76 started in Soweto. It started mm. everywhere.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
The National Party government got greedy.
Yeah.
So they were teaching us Afrikaans as an official language.
Yeah.
They oppressed us. They subjugated us. They deprived us. They were spending out of 100 rand for a white child,
mm.
75 rand for a colored child.
Mm.
45 rand for an Indian child
yeah.
and 10 rand for an African child.
Yeah.
So that's where my sense of social justice
mm.
Kicked in.
Mm.
And then they really got greedy and say, we'll do all the other subjects in Afrikaans
yeah.
as a medium of instruction. So mathematics became Wiskunde.
Yeah.
History in Afrikaans. And agriculture was called Landbou.
Mm.
And we said, no, that now this is going too far.
Mm.
We have to rise, because you see, we realize that the duration of oppression
mm.
is never determined by the oppressor.
Okay.
It's always determined by the oppressed.
Okay.
It's when the oppressor says, this much, this far, and no longer, it stops. Because the one that oppresses you likes to keep you oppressed forever.
Yes, they will yes. never stop.
You are the one that needs to say,
sure,
I will do whatever it takes.
Hmm.
Even if it means taking up arms
yeah.
To end this oppression.
Yeah.
That's what we did. and the most publicized Soweto, of course. But there's also a beautiful story around the Kathoras region, Eskatron, Togoza, and Foslas, because we've always acted in unison.
Mm.
So in doing that, I was in debating team. I had a leadership role, the equivalent of the SRC at that time. And of course, you took your position and propelled forward. You know, the intelligence was amazing at that time of boss of the security agencies.
Yeah.
So they knew who were the agitators, and they came and picked me in the middle of the night. And they beat the hell out of me inside the car.
Sure.
But the people who did most of the beating were three black policemen, not the two big white male Afrikaners. And then when they locked us up, the ones who kept on coming and beating the hell out of us were the African, South African police men, because it was called SAP, not SAPS. It wasn't for long, and then we were released after they thought we've learned our lesson. But at that time, we started organizing that some of us that could, we better leave. So we started sending people to Swaziland, sending people to Botswana, people crossing borders, etc. And just making sure that we remain connected, and those underground cells that are populated and we are active. We formed the defense units in the townships, even during the black-on-black violence between Inkatha and the African National Congress. But to end, I've always thought, you know, I think I can make the best contribution in the struggle by being in business.
Okay.
Because even that early on, I knew that it is possible for a country to achieve its freedom without its people being free. So I didn't want us to be in political office without the economic power. Because there is nothing more heartbreaking than you being the uncle now.
Yeah.
Your nephew comes to you and says, could you give me 350 rand to go and register at the University of Johannesburg?
Sure. That's very deep.
And you say, I don't have.
Yeah.
Where's your self-respect? Where's your self-worth? So when we think of transformation, it is that basic for me. To say, when I pay somebody 7 million rand, to them they'll buy a holiday home. They'll buy a yacht. But if I give it to Babu Ngobo, it is transformational. Because it takes five other families out of poverty.
Exactly.
But more than anything else, it gives this man and this woman a sense of pride.
Yeah.
A sense of belonging. Because successful revolutions are about saying, everybody must have something to lose. If you have nothing to lose, you'll do what we did in the 2 weeks in July, of the 19th of July, of a failed insurrection, of rampant looting. Because you have nothing to lose. But if you have an RDP house, you build a stoop, you put a gate, you demarcate it, you clean it, you don't want it to be sullied. And when people steal, you say, no,
you've got a lot.
I don't want to go to jail. Yeah. I want to make sure that I'm able to pay, to pay this, or at least to better educate my children. Because progress, moving forward in space and time, is to ensure that your children are better off than you. It means that you must finish your own battles so that your own children pick their own new battles. They mustn't finish the unfinished work that we needed to do of social cohesion and nation building.
Sure. I don't know where to start, Ntatemola. I've got questions here. I've got questions here on the live. But what I'll do is, firstly, I must acknowledge my producer. She's greeting you, sending greetings as well. She had to get to some staff who's an Elizama there. And then there's a question from Uzama Malote. He's asking, I just love the pan-Africanist that seems to be coming out of his talk. Does he define himself as a pan-Africanist?
You can't be black and not be
Pan-African. Okay.
You can't be black and not love yourself.
Yeah.
We were taught that black is beautiful. Because this Christianity told us that everything black is backwards and heathen and therefore unworthy. But everything that is white is the opposite.
Yeah.
So it's about what you aspire for.
Yeah.
It's about how do you dream when you are sleeping. When you start dreaming in English, that's when you know you are in trouble.
Mm.
It's about asking yourself a question, who's going to carry my coffin?
Mm.
All of that is Pan-Africanism.
Mm.
Even though I grew up in student movement,
yeah.
and we supported the African National Congress, but Kwame Nkrumah said it best. Mm. 1957, the first African country to be free. That Ghana will never be free until the rest of the continent is
free.
His first speech was Cape to Cairo, Malakasia, to Morocco.
Yeah.
Now we know in leadership that there can be no prosperity when we are only concerned with the self.
Mm.
We call it Ubuntu.
Yeah.
And Ubuntu means you are because I am. Mm. When I look at yourself, I see myself reflected in your image.
Mm.
When we say we're transforming these companies, it's because we want to describe, define, and shape them in our own image.
Mm.
I'm a chancellor of the University of the Free State.
Yeah.
Nothing breaks my heart more than a lady from Limpopo comes into the graduation hall for the first time.
Mm.
And they are looking, staring in the ceiling in awe because they are seeing this for the first time.
Sure.
They look at the gowns that we are wearing. They can't even relate to them.
Mm.
Not only is it foreign, but it's outrightly hostile.
Sure.
Therefore, Pan-Africanism, what we fought for, social justice says, even in academia, can we find an inclusive academic excellence?
Mm.
Can we talk about a contextual freedom of speech?
Mm.
Can we bring a social justice approach in how we define merit?
Mm.
Can we deal with the 10 billion historical debt so that an African child is not excluded only
sure.
because your parents are poor? So the struggle is everywhere and is around us
mm.
because we are born in pain.
Mm.
We brought up in blood, sweat and tears.
Mm.
That for us, the task of transforming is just starting.
Mm.
And I'm not even talking about economic emancipation,
sure.
where we can attain financial independence and financial security.
Mm.
We are still beholden, all of us.
Mm.
We are not three paychecks away from bankruptcy.
Yeah.
We are the most indebted people in South Africa because we're living it up.
Mm.
And to be able to take your kids to school and to live out of the township and to aspire for better, it's because you are borrowed to the hilt.
Mm.
So until and unless, as black people, we say, how do we get ourselves out of this debt? Let me end by saying,
we
can learn a lot from Muslims, from Jewish people, and from Afrikaners, especially the ones that come from Stellenbosch.
Mm.
And the recipe is very simple.
Mm.
It simply says, can you and your family and community regularly speak about business?
Mm.
It says, can you buy from, refer to, and invest in each other and one another's business?
Yeah, yeah.
That's business. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So when black people don't think it's sexy to support other black people, they will be poor for the next 10 lifetimes.
Mm.
But the day we figure it out, and it was Reverend Tio Soko who said we need to patronize our businesses as a matter of course.
Mm.
So I will support you, especially because you are black.
Yeah, yeah.
When I hear that as a black MD that has been promoted, and his name is Sipho Mdlalose at Vodacom, it's my job to pick up the phone and say, my name is Bonang, I just want to congratulate you.
Yeah.
Can I do anything for you? And here are my numbers.
Yeah.
That's what we should do. That's how you build a cadre of successful black people. You can't be happy and excited that you are the only black in the room. You always have to ask the question, what am I doing with this power to improve the quality of lives of the majority of our people? Because leadership is an opportunity to improve the lives of others, not a privilege to enrich self.
Sure. We are first running out of time, but I wanted us to get into that specific one on leadership, particularly, you know, what is leadership? And I know of a story of a certain Mr. Lott, you know, that I believe was one of the people that I suppose inspired your love for leadership and all that. So what is leadership?
So leadership is anybody that feels.
Yeah.
called upon to lead.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the title or the office.
Yeah.
You just have to fill it.
Yeah.
You can be a bus driver and be a leader.
Mm.
People are sweepers at work, but they are church elders.
Yes.
Over the weekends. That's leadership.
Yeah.
So it's best understood when you compare and contrast it with management. Management is about getting things done through others.
Mm.
Leadership is about being genuinely obsessed with the development of others.
Yeah.
Management has to do with the effectiveness and efficiency in climbing the corporate ladder of success.
Okay.
Leadership asks the question, is the ladder leaning against the correct wall in the first instance?
Hey.
So that you're not making progress in the wrong direction. You must make progress in the right direction. In simply put, it says, as black people, can we focus our time, energy and effort on doing the right things, not on doing things right? There's a difference. It's about picking two or three things that says, how do we collectively get out of this self-perpetuating vicious cycle of abject poverty? Because we're not destined to be poor.
Yeah.
We're destined for greatness.
Yeah.
We're sons and daughters of great warriors.
Hey.
Of Shaka, of Skukuni, of Mshweshwe. Our parents roamed and ruled this continent, and we gave it up. So it's about time that we reclaim our streets. And we can't do that on our own.
Yeah.
Nobody has ever achieved anything
yeah.
on their own.
Yeah.
Lastly, behind every successful person, there's a individual who had no choice. 28 years into democracy, we don't have a choice but to reclaim our country back.
Sure. I've got a comment here. Beautiful interview. Please podcast, or we're definitely going to podcast that, Mohali. I have this one question, because I'm going to ask this one question, because I would really love for people to go and buy the book, because I think you unpack quite a lot in the book, but also even in the different interviews you've done over the time. What is the one lesson that you can give to young people? And I was asking you when we were just preparing now, from working for Sandoz then to now. Resilience, determination. What is the one thing that you would say to young people?
Number one is, you can't be that which you don't know. You can't miss what you don't know.
Okay.
If you can't see it, you can't be it.
Okay.
Therefore, young people, surround yourself with people that are better than you.
Mm.
Even if you're in the township, go and find Professor Lumkile Wiseman Nkulu. Go and find Wendy Luhabe. Go and find
Koloko.
Sizwe Ncasana.
Yeah.
Go and find the late Maduke Lawton Ndlovu, because his life is contained in a book.
Yeah.
And you read about that. And have pride in yourself.
Yeah.
That you are poor now.
Yeah.
But poverty is where you come from.
Yes.
It's not where you are going.
Not where you're going.
Because money is never about yesterday.
Yeah.
Money is about tomorrow.
Ooh. Okay. Okay.
Therefore, your fate is up to you. Where you come from, it's your parents.
Yeah.
So, it doesn't matter how hard. If it doesn't cause you pain, it's not worth pursuing. And to get people out of this quagmire where they live in Alexander, 670,000 of them in a 6 square kilometer radius,
sure.
like sardines, only 2 kilometers across the bridge from the richest square mile called Sandton, should be motivation for you each time you open your window to say, that's where I want to be. This is our forefathers' land. I'm going to reclaim it. Not because of land expropriation without compensation, because I'm going to buy it back and choose a life that I want for myself. And I'm going to find other black people to help me. You had a piece of land. You went to the others and said, help me plant, because tomorrow I'm going to help you plant. And then after you've produced, you say, but I've got maize, you've got wheat, somebody has butternut, and then we exchanged, we called it battery.
Yes.
But the work was of equal value.
Yeah.
Marriage is the same.
Yeah.
When your wife decides to stay at home and you go and bring the bacon, the work of staying at home has equal value as the money that you are bringing. And today, because we are more progressive, if my wife earns much more than me, it needs a special man to accept that, to be happy with it, and say, if there's a choice to be made, I will give up my career because you bring bigger bacon, and I respect you for it, rather than feel like it is taking something away from me.
Yeah.
It's taking a special man to say, I'll be the home executive, because you can look after all of us.
What you're saying is beautiful, because that's it. That has been my argument and kind of my thinking the last few days, and I did put it up that I think we need to redefine what it means to be a man these days, especially in the era where women are emancipated and progressive. And I think some of our forefathers found their definition and their identity as men, the fact that they can provide. And so in some sort of way, they became a little bit abusive, I suppose, you know, because imoletimali, so you're going to do what I want, you know. So to hear that for me has been quite interesting. I've got a comment here from Sunny that says, some wisdom shared tonight, definitely getting the book. Because wow. So that's Sareliswa there. Comment that has been coming through there. But I want us to end here, Tata Mohale, with time not being on our side. I've got 4 minutes. I want to use the first minute. What are the objectives of BUSA?
To represent business.
Yeah.
So that business can make this country work.
Okay.
Because we are clear that if we are going to wait for this ANC-led government, they are incapable of self-correction.
Yeah.
Therefore, what is our role as business?
Okay. And then number two, work hard or work smart?
Both.
Both. Okay.
In the 21st century, if you did one, it won't be enough.
Okay.
We have to work both hard and smart, because the work of liberating our children so that they can inherit a better South Africa will need all our shoulders to the wheel, not the one shoulder.
Okay. Here's another question. Doesn't Tate Mohale sleep?
Yes, I sleep very well at night because I became debt-free when I was 40.
Oh,
but
wow.
I sleep very well at night because I don't sleep alone.
Okay.
I sleep with Susan.
That's beautiful. That's quite beautiful. Okay. What is your relationship with money?
Respect.
Okay.
My biggest fear is a fear of poverty.
Yeah.
Because I know what it is like to be poor.
Yeah.
I don't ever want to go back there.
Yeah.
It's wonderful to be not so poor and still be humble and approachable.
Mm.
The same way that you can be the biggest boss.
Yes.
And still people find you to be human.
Yeah.
That's why when we see each other in the bush, we say, Sakubona.
Yes. Yes.
And we say, Ngiyavuma ukuba ngumuntu. Ngiyabona uri umuntu.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why you'll never mistakenly shoot another human being thinking that human being is a monkey.
Mm.
When you are jogging and you meet another person, you say hello.
Yes.
It feels uncomfortable to pass people with just saying hi.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Another question, would Tate Mohale run for presidency if asked?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
I will run for the presidency of Business Unity South Africa.
Okay.
Each of us must stay in our lane.
Okay.
So I'm a businessman.
Wow, that's a beautiful way to answer it. A nasty one. What is Tate Mohale's net worth? Nasty. It's here, Tate Mohale. You can choose not to answer it.
I am so happy that my two daughters don't have to worry about those things.
Okay.
They chose where they wanted to be educated.
Yeah.
Tsepiso's first undergraduate was at Instituto da Empresa in Madrid. She bought an apartment and lived in Madrid.
Sure.
Her second master's was at the International University of Monaco. And she bought an apartment in Monte Carlo. My last one is Manero.
Sure.
When she chose to get educated, she went to the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. It's a 22-hour flight from here. She spent 4 years. That, for me, is what it means to be the head of the family.
Sure.
Because being the head of the family says, I want to be the head of the family, the same way that Christ is the head of the church.
Ah.
To serve, not to give instructions.
Sure. Last question, Tate Mohale.
I'm truly blessed. And for me, I think as black people, we have so much potential. We have such bone deep gifts. We just need to come up to our potential. Not even use our fullest potential. If we buy from each other, we invest in each other and one another, we support each other and one another, collectively as 90% of the population, we are rich.
Sure. I have no words but to say thank you. And I want to just ask while we are here in the moment, part two is coming, right?
Yes, absolutely. So when you invite me, I'm definitely coming.
Oh, because nice.
You see, in Africa, we know that a child that is not embraced by his village will burn it down in order to feel its warmth.
Yeah.
I want you to feel my warmth.
Sure. Listeners, thank you so much for joining us this evening. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for the questions. There's lots of them. Unfortunately, I couldn't get to all of them, but like Ntate Mohale said, we're going to have a part two. So please do make sure that you stick around for that. Ntate Mohale, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Thank you so much. We can continue the conversation on 0734703520, 0734703520, and our Twitter handle is @AWRSID_media. That's certainly where you can find us. What a way to end the week right here on Business Sense. I have absolutely no words, and I appreciate each and every one of you that has joined us right here on the show. We do this thing again next week between Monday and Thursday. Please do make sure that you do join us for that. Guess what? I'm here with Ntate Mohale for my book signing. Yeah, just for those of you, yeah, so that you know. Anyways, until next time, may God bless you and keep you. May He cause His countenance to so shine upon you and give you peace until you meet next time. Goodbye.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.